Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of our program, Day to Be Different. Just wonderful to have you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548, satellite Islam, and to those of you listening to us via to those listening via DSTV 826. And we've had wonderful weather on our side of the world. That's out in Gauteng. We had beautiful, beautiful rain last night, and we are truly blessed. And we're looking at this, I'm not too sure what the weather is like in other parts of the country, but ours, the sun is peeking through, so we've got some sunshine coming through. And we've got lots lined up for you this morning, a wonderful program. To those of you that joined us last week and was part of our conversation, thank you very much for joining. Jazakumullah khair, it was wonderful. And I hope you've all had a wonderful garden day. That was the second time that we've celebrated. It's now going to become an annual event. It's a time when gardeners are to take a break, relax, and enjoy the garden. I must say to you, many of us are in our gardens from early in the morning to late in the evenings, and sometimes don't have time to sit back and say, wow, this is what we've done, and this is what we are going to get. And really, speaking to a number of people over the week, and everyone said, a garden is that space that we can do so much. It's a space where we can be to ourselves, our thoughts, a space where we reflect, a place that we can just be with ours, just to be able to do what we wanting to do without being disturbed. Many of us out in our gardens, I know, leaving our cell phones, very tucked away, very far away, don't want to be disturbed. And others, just getting their hands in the soil. People say, but it's dirty. Well, ask gardeners, and they really love it. Mohammed is smiling, yes, and let me say to you, it's just very therapeutic. This morning we've got a wonderful guest, and someone who's no stranger, always offers us such wonderful advice, and that's Michelle Kudze of Brandt Miller Nursery. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Ismail.
Am I right? Gardeners have a wonderful time when they're out in their gardens, dirtying their hands, and we don't have to worry about mummy saying, what, clean, and go in and wash your hands and scrub them. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And there's really nothing better than the feeling of actually feeling the earth.
Yes, and whilst we have some people wearing gloves, I know lots of people say, no, but we don't need the gloves. We want to touch the earth. We want the earth to, have contact with our skin. Is it true?
Yes, a lot of people enjoy having the contact. Others prefer gloves, especially the ladies with the long nails. They prefer the gloves. But me personally, I like to feel the soil.
Yes, and is it something that that brings out the childhood in us? I said, when you're out there, you go and you just forget about things. You're digging up, and sometimes you can come across some of the insects and some nasty ones and some of the ho-hos, and sometimes you get a lot of the earthworms. And when people get the earthworms, oh, then you find, no, we don't want to get anywhere. We don't want to get near that soil again. Does it happen?
Oh, yes, most definitely. The thing is, what people need to remember, earthworms are actually good worms, and they do so much good because they actually sort of improve the soil quality by sort of tilling the soil.
And sometimes when we look at, maybe it's a phobia, maybe it's a childhood scare that you've had, so you don't really want to touch them. And sometimes they seem a bit slimy, and say, well, earthworms and snails, no, those are two things we don't want to touch, because it doesn't seem to, the feel on our hands won't be very pleasant. That's, I suppose, what happens to many of us.
Yes.
In our part of the world, we had wonderful, wonderful rain. Did the same thing happen in your side, Michelle, last night?
Yes, we did, virtually throughout the night. And this morning is overcast. The sun is trying to come out, but I don't think it's going to come out right now if I look at the clouds.
Well, that's very good news, because, we need as much rain as we can get after the devastating a drought that we've had. And the drought hasn't broken in the Western Cape as yet. And we're fortunate in our part to have had lots of rain. Again, Michelle, talking about the rain that we have, lessons that were learned must not be forgotten.
Correct. Yes, I think people still need to remember that we're a drought-stricken country and they need to save water. And even though we're having rain at the moment now, people need to realize that they need to use water wisely and not waste anything.
And if you look at the predictions coming out of the scientists, and they're saying that we're going to go into a period where we're going to have lots of periods without water. So we're going to, being a water-stressed country is one, and we're going to have lots of periods where we're not going to have lots of rain. So we must understand that, and until we build the additional dams they're talking about, it's going to be quite something that we have to learn to live with, something that we learn to manage. And many of us, have such short memories. We see the rains coming and we've forgotten, we go back to old habits.
That's very true, yes.
Now, Michelle, you know, whilst we're talking of all of what has to be done, what was, you know, the reaction to people with the second Garden Day?
A lot of people still came shopping on that day, especially early in the morning. But many of my customers said that they actually had a party and invited people over, and they sat and relaxed and enjoyed their garden. And after all, that's the purpose of Garden Day, is to actually sit back in your garden and enjoy it.
And when you're talking about, you know, enjoying, would it be true to say that gardeners don't really get the full value of the garden? They're so busy working in the garden, they're so busy, you know, trying to get plants in the right space, trying, you know, to make sure that all the plants, you know, are fed and the plants have given have adequate water. And by the time they come back, they're so tired they don't have time to or the opportunity to enjoy the gardens.
Yes, I think many people are so busy working, and others that have the time are working in the garden, and as you say, they don't necessarily sit back and enjoy their garden. And one really should, you know, sit back, reflect, see what you've done, and sort of plan while you're sitting in your garden, plan what changes you want to make. But I do think everyone is just so busy these days that I don't think people have the time to sit back and enjoy their gardens.
Do you have your own garden day, perhaps, you know, where you sit back one day and just say, look, I'm doing nothing today, going to sit, reflect and just enjoy my garden?
No, unfortunately, I work 7 days a week, so I enjoy the garden and the nursery.
Yes, I know that. And, you know, once you've been bitten by, well, I can't say, well, you know, once you're in the garden and you know what gardening is all about, you can't seem to let go of that. You go in there every morning, in, you know, get reinvigorated, trying to do things and say, well, this needs to be done, this is what I'm going to do, and you keep on potting.
No, most definitely, and especially if one takes your own clips and makes your own cuttings, and if you're sowing your own seed, it's so nice and so rewarding to go and watch it every day and see what the progress is, how they've grown.
And the number to dial this morning, 854-1548, if you have any queries, any questions, if you'd like to join our conversations. And one bit I'd like people to share with us, has anybody been successful in growing a fruit tree in a pot? We're not talking about the citrus fruit, any other fruit. Is there anyone who has been successful? Please join us and tell us how you've done it and what you've done. And this morning our conversation is going to round around container gardening. Many people have scaled down, are not able to, you know, have the same luxury of bigger gardens. Others, you know, for medical reasons cannot go down and bend, and they've now resorted to container gardening. So we're going to be focusing on that particular aspect, but any other aspect you'd like to want to share with us, would like to talk to us, the number to dial this morning is 854-1548. Now, when we talk about container gardening, is that a trend that's growing, Michelle?
Oh, yes, most definitely, because as you say, everyone's scaling down in the smaller properties today. Often people don't have much soil available, so container gardening is definitely a growing hobby, as it were.
Now, when you're looking at, you know, container gardening, I think there's a number of factors we need to take into account. First of all, is when you're shopping for a pot, whatever pot should we be looking? Is a plastic pot good enough? A terracotta pot? A clay pot? What would you suggest would be a good pot? Or the asbestos one? Which one be? Or the cement? I'm not sure. What type of pot would we be looking out for?
Basically, if not any pot can work. We've used plastic pots ourselves for many years. There's nothing wrong with a plastic pot. I think it's a case of preference and aesthetics. A lot of people prefer real terracotta pots because with age they actually get mold growing on them and moss growing on them, which makes them look a little bit more antique. So I think it depends on what type of look you're after and also what matches your house, you know, whether it's more modern or whether you've got more of a sort of Tuscan-style home. But whether it's terracotta or plastic or cement, it really makes no difference. What is important is that if you're going to be painting your pots, particularly your cement pots or those that have possibly still some of the old asbestos pots, is to not use an oil-based paint. It must be a water-based paint so that the plants can actually still breathe, because what the oil-based paint does, it actually sort of seals the pot, as it were, and then the plants can't breathe anymore, if I can explain it that way.
And what about plastic pots now? They're talking about, well, cement. That would plastic pots do? Because I'm just thinking about not being able to breathe, as you pointed out. Would that be a challenge?
Not really, because as I say, we've used plastic pots for years and never ever had a problem.
And with plastic, you're spoiled for choices because you get them in different shapes and different sizes, and so a good lick of paint would mask whether it's plastic or not.
Yes, no, plastic is no problem. The important thing with pots is to remember that they must have drainage holes, because often, particularly with the plastic pots, a lot of them that are available on the market these days are more plastic covers, if I can call it that, that you actually place your plant in there and not plant directly in it. So if you're wanting to plant directly, you need to make sure that there's drainage holes.
So, with regards to the pots, the type of pots, there's no real preference, but certain pots have advantage over others. For example, just looking at that, if you have a terracotta pot, it dries out faster than perhaps a plastic one. Is that right?
Most definitely, yes, it will.
And once we have the pot and we determine the type of pot, what about the size? Would the size matter when we are doing certain plants?
Yes, most definitely. You need to take your plant's root system into account. So, for example, if you're planting veggies, something like lettuce, for example, they don't have a very deep root system. So you could go sort of more for a flower box shape or a shallow pot, whereas something like a tomato, which becomes a tall plant, some of them can reach up to 2 meters, you would need slightly more depth. So there you would be looking at possibly 30 centimeters in depth. And what is also important when you're selecting your pot is the shape of the pot. And why I say that is, particularly if you're planting fast-growing things, maybe some shrubs that you're planting in, if you choose a pot that's got a narrow neck at the top, eventually, once your shrub has outgrown the pot and you need to remove it, it's very difficult to remove it if the pot comes narrow at the top. Whereas if you choose a shape that tapers to the bottom or that's more straight-sided, it's much easier to remove the plant when it becomes too big for the pot to replace it with another plant.
So when we are starting out, would it be a good idea to have a larger pot than to start with a smaller pot and repot? Or is it better to have a larger pot from the beginning?
It's better to sort of upsize it as it goes along, because what happens is, especially if you're using potting soil, the soil doesn't get used up and it becomes sour over time. So it's better to plant it in a pot and then as it needs a bigger pot, go slightly bigger and bigger. It's much better than to take a small plant and put it in a huge pot. And also, it doesn't look right in proportion.
You've mentioned something about the soil getting sour. Now, the next one I wanted us to just share with our listeners is the soil. Tell us about the soil and how important it is for a container.
Okay, well, first of all, we have to have a layer of drainage at the bottom. You can either put broken terracotta chips at the bottom or pebbles, which I think is a waste of money to actually go and buy pebbles and put them in the bottom of the pot. So what we've always recommended is that you take your old polystyrene from your TV or whatever you've bought, or your polystyrene seedling trays, and break them up and put them at the bottom as a layer of drainage, which also makes your pot lighter. And then you need a good potting mix. So buy a commercial potting mix in a bag, or if you can't or don't get hold of one, what you could do is use garden soil, which you mix with compost, about a third of compost with two-thirds of garden soil. But I must say that the potting mix that's available these days is really good, and they've even added cocoa fiber to it, which helps retain moisture. Because previously, a couple of years ago, everybody was complaining, saying that the potting soil just drains so quickly, but it has been improved, and it does retain a lot more moisture. So that's what I would certainly recommend.
Looking at some of the articles, I came across one that says, you know, make your own, and in there you take in your kitchen scraps, banana peels, crushed egg shells, some uncooked shells, and a lot of that, put that together with a farmyard manure, and you mix it, and once it's matured, you then use that as a soil. Would that not burn the vegetables? Is that too strong, do you think, in nitrogen?
Basically, I think you would have to wait until it's all decomposed. I think that's what they're saying. Make your own compost with it and then add crumb manure. But you'd certainly need some soil. You couldn't use that on its own. You would have to add some garden soil or topsoil.
And when you are buying this particular mixture, is there any formula that you should be looking out? Is it 317, 315? Or is it what would you recommend for a person who's starting out?
Basically, the potting mix, if I may mention the brand, I find that the Caltera works very well. We use it in all our pots and our flower boxes. And it really, as I say, the new mix retains a lot of moisture. And then for feeding, you could take something general like a 315, which would encourage flowers and fruit. Because generally what one plants in pots is things for fruiting or flowering or like vegetables. So 315 would be the best choice.
So if you are shopping and you need to buy your mix, you'd ask for a potting mix.
And then for feeding, 315.
For 315 for that.
Yes.
And another thing that you've mentioned, which was very important, was the drainage. And what type of regimen do you have to have with regards to watering? We're now talking about these plots that are on your balcony. How often would you water them? What type of water would you put in?
Yes, now that's a very difficult question because it depends on the actual position, how much sun it gets. If it's against a wall, the position is usually hotter. If it's on paving, it's hotter. So I always recommend using your index finger and actually feeling the soil. And you need to wait until the soil is just not moist anymore to water. I think most people tend to overwater their containers, but one needs to remember that those that are around the poolside often tend to dry out more because it's in full sun, as opposed to those that might be in a spot where they get a bit of shade. So the position really determines the amount of water, how often one needs to water. And then one needs to give enough that it runs out the bottom. And here I'd also like to mention that a lot of people like to use a saucer or a tray at the bottom. And I don't believe in that for the simple reason that the roots then can't get oxygen because the roots are actually smothered because they're standing in water. And you also have salt buildup. So it's actually a good idea not to have a saucer unless you've got very fancy tiles and you don't want the water to run onto the tiles. So there are also pot feet available which you can put under the pot. To put that on top of the saucer, or you can even take 2 liter Coke bottle lids and put them underneath the pot, provided the pot isn't that heavy, just to lift it so that there is some space for the water to drain away. So I would say in general, probably twice a week for container plants to water them. And as I say, you need to feel with your index finger depending on the position. If it's a very hot position, you might need to water more.
And when you're talking about watering and you say you're not encouraging a saucer, and all the nutrients would be leached out, so you would have to have a feeding regimen. How often would you feed?
It depends on what type of fertilizer. If you're using a granular fertilizer, like a 2-3-4 or a 3-1-5, you would do it once a month. And if you opt for a liquid fertilizer, something like a Nitrosol or a SeaGrow that you're mixing in water, that type is generally every 2 weeks that you use that. So in other words, the day that you're watering, instead of watering that day, you would water with the food water, if I can just put it in layman's terms like that.
So it depends on what you're using. If it's granular, once a month. If it's liquid, once every 2 weeks. Would that be correct?
That's correct, yes.
So we've got that now. And now when we're looking at the choice of plants, we're going to do that after we come back from there. We're going to look at the different types of veggies and herbs as well as fruit that we can plant in containers and what would do well. So all of that after the break. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ismail Briava, and just wonderful to have all of you tuning in to our edition Dare to Be Different. And if any queries, any questions we'd like to contribute to the conversation, number 854-1548. And the question we put out is, has anybody been successful in planting fruit trees in containers? We're not talking about citrus, but any other fruits. We'd love you to join our conversation. Tell us how successful you've been and how you've been able to do that. We know that that happens in America and in other parts of the world where they have dwarf varieties. Here in South Africa, we're not that successful and we haven't had them, and I'm not too sure the demand is going to grow for those particular type of trees to be brought in or to be grafted. And just talking to Michelle about that, she said that would depend on growers. Before we continue, we've got a call online. Assalamu alaikum. Hello.
Hello, walaikum salam.
Please go ahead.
Yeah. I'd like to ask Michelle, pelargoniums, what time of the year do we repot them? Because sometimes they're in flower and we can't repot. What type of pot and what fertilizer to use?
Pelargoniums, I'm just putting down the pelargoniums. What type of pot and when? Okay.
Yeah, when. I mean, you know, they flower, you know, sometimes. Should we repot them in flower or out of flower? Well, of course, probably out of flower. And then what type of fertilizer do we use for them? And do you get special pelargonium pots?
That's like pelargonium pots or fertilizer pot.
Oh, no, fertilizer and pot.
Okay.
Fertilizer or pots, you know, I mean, what type of pot do we use for a pelargonium?
Thank you very much for that call. And did you hear the questions, Michelle?
Yes, I did. First of all, you could use either a terracotta pot or a plastic pot. And just slightly bigger than the ones they're currently in. And you are correct in saying, yes, you should rather pot them when they're not in flower. But if you can't, you can pot them while they're in flower, as long as you don't disturb the roots. So in other words, soak them first in a bucket of water and then remove the pot and then repot it into a slightly bigger pot using potting mix. And then as far as fertilizer goes, Pocon does have a special pelargonium food. And you can also use multi-seed. We've used it with great success. Or 315. Any of those will work.
Thank you very much for that and for the caller and for those responses. We've got a number of callers coming through, Mohammed. Yes, we've got another one. Let's take that one. Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Please go ahead.
I'm thinking from Verulam.
Okay.
After all, the cold and wind is quite warm today. And I went to the garden and I got some basil leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It's very healthy, and a lot of small flowers are coming like seeds. I want to know how to plant them. Somebody told us the seed for the basil leaf. And you had a few weeks ago a program regarding the mixture of oil and vitamin soda for the plant. Must you put some of the leaves or just put at the bottom? Because I've got a lot of mint, curry leaves, and basil leaf.
And are you saying this is in fact with the insecticides and hojas?
Yeah. For that, because at the moment, we heard in our local radio, and what I should do, my kitchen water, I always put around by the roots, so the plants are growing very well, and I don't see much cocos. But that other mixture I want to try, I want to know if must be put from on top of the leaves or just put at the bottom by the roots.
Okay, we'll answer that. Will you listen on air, off air?
Okay, right. Assalamu
alaikum. Michelle is talking about somebody had given us homemade recipe for all of this. And can I just perhaps share it with our listeners? I'm just trying to get that out for us. But do you get the question, Michelle?
No, I didn't get the whole question.
Okay, he says he's got this basil leaves and he's got a number of other plants there, and they seem to be infected with, aphids and insecticides. Yes. He wants to know how to utilize it. And somebody called in and given us something last week. Can I repeat it and perhaps give it to our listeners?
Sure.
It says 2 liters of water, 1 tablespoon of bicarb, 1 tablespoon of oil. It could be used oil, and 2 tablespoons of sunlight liquid. You vigorously shake, and then you spray the underside of the plants. Did you hear that mixture, perhaps?
I haven't heard of that. I've heard of sunlight, the sunlight bar that they grate, as opposed to the sunlight liquid. We find that the bar works so much better.
Okay, but here it was 2 liters of water, 1 tablespoon of bicarb, 1 tablespoon of oil, and 2 tablespoons of sunlight liquid. You take all of that, you shake it vigorously, and then you then spray the underside of the plant. What would happen there is then it would, I'm not too sure, suffocate, I think, those aphids. And I beg your pardon?
Yes, it probably would, and I think the oil they're using to actually make it stick to the plant.
Yes, so that was what someone had called in and shared with us. That was one of our listeners, I beg your pardon, it was one of our guests on the program 2 weeks ago. And he wanted to know about the basil leaf sprouting, and can he transplant those seeds from the basil, you know, now that it's flowering. I'm not too sure. Could that happen?
Yes, you can. You should be removing your basil flowers, because otherwise they're going to go to seed quickly, and then obviously your plant's going to finish. So you need to try and remove the leaves as soon as possible, the flowers as soon as possible. But if they do make seed, you can certainly plant that seed. I would recommend something like a germination mix or otherwise a potting soil. And one just needs to make sure that you keep the seeds moist. I think the gentleman said he's from Verulam, which is somewhere in KZN, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Which, you see, they're so much hotter there, which means the basil will go to seed so much quicker. So will the coriander. So one needs to just continuously remove the flowers to stop them from going to seed.
And I think the other trick would be not to bury the seeds, but to just on the top, your topsoil, just to scatter it on the topsoil. Is that correct?
You can do that, and then you just need to cover it with a fine layer of soil, and the big thing is to make sure that you keep it moist. Any seed that dries out won't germinate, so it's very important. So obviously you wouldn't put it in full sun, you'd put it somewhere where it gets a bit of shade. You can even put a piece of glass over it, because then with condensation there will always remain water on top of the seed to keep it moist.
Thank you very much for that, and if you have any queries, any questions, again, the number 854-1548, we're still waiting to see if anybody has been successful. Michelle, do you think that will happen? Would you think someone be successful in planting a fruit tree in a pot?
And not the fruit trees that are currently available, because they're just so huge. What is successful is the olives, because I've seen some of the garden centres have small sort of lollipop-shaped olives. So if it's a fairly big pot of about a metre or so, I'm sure you'd be able to do olives in that. And, of course, something like bay leaves you can certainly do in a pot. They make a beautiful shrub and even a very nice lollipop. And I've also seen some small lollipop-shaped pomegranates, which I think would also work in pots.
So those are the three that you know of. And, of course, we spoil when it comes to the winter or the citrus crops, because there I think almost all of them can be planted into pots.
Oh, yes, most definitely. The citrus does much better in pots than in the garden, for the simple reason that they need good drainage. And I think that's often the problem where people have clay soils.
Now, we're looking at a number of plants that we can, a number we're looking at vegetables and herbs. And are we spoiled for choices this time of the year?
Oh, yes, most definitely. So many of the garden centres have got so many different varieties of tomatoes at this time of the year, chilies, different peppers, and then, of course, the lettuce, the butter lettuce, the normal crisp lettuce, the lettuce that you only pick the leaves of, and then onions, brinjal, spinach. Off the top of my head, that's what I can think of quickly. Even cabbages. However, the cabbage seem to do better in the cooler weather than in summer, because in summer you tend to get a lot of aphids.
What about potatoes?
Potatoes, yes, it's also the right time of year, and you should find sweet potatoes at this time of year as well.
I read somewhere that a potato would do well in buckets. Is that correct?
They do. I actually saw a picture, I think it was on Facebook, where they'd taken a pot and cut windows on the side, if I can explain it like that, and then they put that pot into another pot, and they filled it with potting soil and then planted the potatoes. And when you harvest, you can actually harvest them through the sides of those open windows that you've cut out of the plastic pot.
That must be fantastic. We've got a couple of calls. Let's take that one again. Hello, Assalamu Alaikum. Please go ahead.
What I want to find out is about this cumin plant.
Cumin plant?
Yeah. Is it cumin or cucumin? No, a red one.
Okay. So, let me ask. I beg your pardon, what did you want to know about the plant?
What I want to find out is they grow quite deep, and now it's dried up in the winter, but it'll come up. Should I remove the whole cumin itself, or what should I do there?
Well, just before I hand over to Michelle, it's a tuber. It looks very much like a ginger. And let me see if Michelle can help us. Michelle, we talked about cucumin plant. It looks like ginger. Now, do you have to remove it? And the question is, what would you do with it and to make sure that it grows or it continues growing?
I must be honest, I'm not familiar with it because I've never grown it myself, but being family of the ginger, normally they would grow in tropical areas, so it would have to be definitely in a warmer area. And generally those type of plants with the tubers like that, they die down in winter and come back in spring. So I would actually just leave it to naturally die down and then come back. Most bulbs and tubers that die down, one mustn't cut the foliage off, because if you cut the foliage off, you cut the food off for the following year. So leave it to die back naturally. That's what I would do.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you very much for that call. We've got another one, Mohammed. No, thank you. And whilst we're talking about spoiled for choices, and what do you think, before we go on to that, another question I've got is baby varieties of vegetables, are that easily available?
Yes and no. Some of the garden centres do have them. Some of them have what they call cucumber patio snacker, I think was the name, which is a dwarf cucumber suited to pots. and brinjal, baby, bambino, I think it was called, which is also a dwarf plant, which is obviously better suited for containers. And then even in the tomatoes, you get a small cherry tomato called red robin, which is a very small plant, only reaching about 30 centimeters, if that high. And that can also be planted in hanging baskets. So it is definitely a new trend, and some of them are available already. But those are the three specific ones that I can think of that I know I've seen.
And when you have others that would need larger spaces, for example, if you have a cucumber and you have a grenadilla and so forth, those would need lots of space because they'd grow prolifically and take over a lot of other plants, isn't that?
They do, and one has to have some form of a trellis for them to creep on.
Okay, and do you have any of these in stock, perhaps the climbing cucumbers and the runner beans and so forth? Do you have any of those?
Runner beans, I only have seed, not plants, because they don't plant over that easily, and they're so easy from seed, so generally the growers don't really do beans, but I have some of the small red robin tomatoes that I mentioned and the baby fatio brinjal.
What about the zucchinis, you know, the small baby marrows, are those easy to plant?
They are easy to plant. Yes, they also do very well from seed, really easy. And what you can do is sort of plant two or three seeds in the same hole so that you get a plant quicker. I have them in pots available, but it's not the dwarf variety. It's the normal one, which have already started flowering, so they'll have fruit very soon.
And when you mean it's a normal variety, what would be the size of the particular fruit?
The normal one.
Okay, the normal. Okay, so it's quite large. It's not the very small one.
The fruit is slightly smaller, yes, but it's a normal shape. So it will basically look like a miniature baby marrow.
Okay. Now, when you know we're talking about plants that would do well from seedlings, we're not talking about seeds, but it's a bit too late for seeds, isn't it?
It is getting a bit late, yes. However, with the wonderful rain we've had, that will certainly make a difference, and the stuff will grow so much quicker. So you could still try and put some seed in.
When we're talking about seedlings now, we're talking about eggplants, that's the brinjals, we talk about chilies, and we talk about capsicums and tomatoes. That's all available.
That's all available this time of the year, and generally at this time it's available either in seedling trays or even in small pots, slightly bigger plants, because some people have only got space for one tomato plant on the balcony, so then they can just buy the individual tomato plants up, and then those that have got bigger gardens can buy the seedling trays.
And are we spoiled for choices in terms of, you know, the type of varieties? Because we don't only have a tomato that we know now, it's traditionally tomato, but we have different sizes, different colors, different shapes. Would that all be available?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I have, for example, at the moment, I counted this morning, 11 different tomatoes. I have the ox heart, and then I have three or four different cherry tomatoes, one of which is the small yellow pear, which is lovely in salads, and then your traditional moneymaker, red khaki hinds, your normal medium-sized tomato, and then also the Roma, which is the one they use more for the tomato sauces and even for sun-dried tomatoes. And then in the chilies, there's all sorts of chilies available. There's jalapenos, there's habaneros, the small bird's eye, which is very hot, and then I even have the small one, the baby processing one, that they use to bottle.
And when you talk about these varieties, there's definitely a distinguishing flavors, you know, for example, the tomatoes. A tomato is not just a tomato, it would have a different flavor. Would that be correct? Because the moment he's shaking his head and saying, well, I know the tomato, it just looks like a tomato, and all tomatoes taste the same. Would it be correct to say that?
No, they definitely don't taste the same. Some have more of a meaty flavor, and others have more of a tangy flavor. No, they definitely have a different flavor. And just like the chilies are different, the tomatoes are also certainly different in flavor.
And, you know, just walking around someone's garden, there was just a couple of days, I saw the tulbachia, that is
the wild
garlic. That's available?
Yes, most definitely. And that's also a good thing to plant in between your veggies or herbs because it helps keep the insects away, as does the marigold. Normal marigolds you can also plant in between. And what I'd also like to mention is nasturtiums. If you just sow a few nasturtiums, they use the nasturtium as a trap crop. In other words, especially near your cabbages, that it will actually attract the aphids to the nasturtium and hopefully they'll leave your cabbage alone.
Yes, but there's also a trend now to harvest the nasturtium leaves and to harvest the nasturtium seeds. There's lots of uses for them, pestos, and some are saying that the seeds would be, you know, would taste like capers. I remember I had once a guest who said that they, you know, bottle it. So there's lots of use for the nasturtiums.
Oh, yes, most definitely. But the thing is, you'll have to make sure that you rinse them off properly, because nasturtiums definitely do attract aphids.
And the tulpbachia, can that be utilized? No, the whole plant or just the seed? Or, I beg your pardon, just the root?
No, as far as I know, they don't actually eat the tulpbachia. It's just basically used as an insect repellent. I'm not aware that you can actually eat it.
Well, somebody, you know, was there the other day and said it tastes very much like garlic, and you could use it like any other garlic plant. And it's not just as pungent, but definitely has the same uses.
As I say, I'm not aware of the fact that you can eat it.
Thank you very much for that. And now, you know, we're talking about some of the other herbs. Tell us about what you have in stock. Do you have the comfrey, perhaps?
I do. I have the general normal herbs, if I can call it that, the kitchen herbs, things like bay and basil and oregano and thyme and chives, and then all the different mint. And then I also have a few sort of more less known herbs like the comfrey, the African wormwood. I've got horseradish, which isn't readily available. I've got rhubarb as well. And then I've even got lovage. They call the lovage the Maggie herb, which is quite a big plant. It reaches about a meter or so. The leaves look very much like celery leaves, and the flavor is just like absolute Maggie. So if you're using like a vegetable stew and you want to give it a bit of a meaty flavor, you would then add some lovage leaves.
And the conditions in which it would do well?
Basically, it needs full sun and fairly well-drained soil.
Tell us about the African wormwood. What plant and what is its uses?
The African wormwood is more for medicinal use, and it's got lovely grey foliage, so those that like a bit of grey in the garden can certainly plant that, and it also reaches about a meter or so, and it's perennial, so once you've got it, it's there forever. And as I say, they powder it and use it around ants' nests to chase ants away, and then they have various medicinal uses for it. I think they even make an oil from it.
So that would be part of traditional, indigenous herbs, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
I've
also got things like lemongrass, which they use a lot in Thai cooking, and lemon thyme as well, and then even lemon verbena, which becomes a huge shrub. A lot of people don't know it. They think it's a tiny little herb, but it's a huge shrub, and the leaves smell of lemon, and they use it to make teas as well.
It's a lovely plant to have. I have one in the garden. I must say to you, you have absolute pleasure just to use, just to brush yourself, you know, against that particular plant, you know, gives off that beautiful lemon-scented, you know. So it's a wonderful plant. I know that if you do have space, that would be one of the plants I'd recommend somebody to have, if you have the space. And would it do well in a pot, the lemon verbena?
Yes, it does. The only thing, it's deciduous, so in winter your pot would be bare. So, but you can even plant them in between your roses. It'll help keep the aphids away from the roses.
And what about bay? Tell us something about the bay leaf.
The bay leaf is fairly slow growing. That's why they tend to be fairly expensive. If you leave it to grow on its own, it'll actually form a very nice flame-shaped shrub. And you do get them in lollipops as well. And they do very well in pots. And they need full sun and not too much water. And they're actually very tough. And, of course, the leaves are lovely when you're cooking meat. And you actually put it into your dish that you're cooking your meat or roasting your meat in the oven. You can even use dried bay leaves in your cake flour to stop weevils.
And when we talk about all these particular herbs, would they need any specific care, or would they be, like all other herbs, treated in the same way?
The bay leaf, yes. You would treat it very much the same. As I say, it's just a very much slower grower. Most of the other herbs grow very fast, whereas the bay leaf seems to be a lot slower. And then you just trim them and cut their leaves as you require them, and then dry them and use them.
Query coming in, do you have any stevia in stock? Do you know about the stevia plant, and do you have it available?
Yeah, stevia is what the diabetics use in the place of sugar. It's a wonderful plant, a perennial plant, but in the colder areas it dies in winter. Unfortunately, I haven't managed to locate any stevia this season yet.
And I think I asked you about one particular plant, and that was the tea tree. Do you have that?
The Australian tea tree, no, unfortunately not. There's a couple of herbs that I've really battled to find this year, and that happens to be one of them.
Okay, and just before we round up, tell us what you have, and whereabouts are you situated, Michelle?
We're situated about 5 minutes south of Roshni, on the northern side of Vereeniging, and we've got some wonderful specials for today specifically. There's Inca lilies on special, which are perennials, and they just come up all the time. And Bora. There's even some chilies and pots that are on special for today only. And then we have gloves for those that don't want to get their fingers dirty. There's small watering cans, which are perfect for watering your herbs. There's rain gauges for monitoring the rain. And then we've got hedge clippers as well on special, some roses on special, and agapanthus as well. And these specials that I've mentioned are not available just here. They're available at any of the garden pavilions. So those that are maybe on the east, in Kempton Park, there's a garden pavilion, and in Bedford View, there's one as well.
Well, thank you very much for all that information sharing with us. And you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of this day. And I know you're going to be very, very busy. Again, just go quickly. You do have, you said you have comfrey in stock. I have lots of people, you know, listeners querying about comfrey. So you definitely have comfrey. And the African woodworm and the lovage. Is there any other rare herb that you have that you'd like to share and tell us about?
Well, basically the horseradish I mentioned earlier, because that's not always readily available, and that they use the roots of to make horseradish sauce, and it makes a very nice plant. It's got long sort of spear-shaped leaves which reach about a foot high, and it really makes a lovely plant, and I've noticed that it likes a shady spot that gives, it's sort of, if you've got a shady damp spot, that's the perfect spot for the horseradish.
I don't think would it do well in a pot, or would it be in the ground?
In the ground or in pots. I've actually got some growing in pots and they're doing very well.
And the depth of the pot?
The depth would have to be about 30 centimeters.
Oh, so it would do the, you know, well, I thought you'd need a very sort of deep pot for a horseradish.
No. As I said, I've got some in 30 centimeter pots and they're really doing well.
Quickly, a question about parsley. I don't have success with parsley. What do you think is going wrong?
I've mentioned this on the radio before. Sorry, I'm laughing because parsley is a temperamental plant. If the husband has planted the parsley, let the wife try. And if that doesn't work, try gloves. Because honestly, one of my staff members that continuously plants my parsley, he's got such green fingers, but he can't plant parsley. And then I think I've mentioned on the radio before, he actually used gloves. And then when he used gloves, the parsley grew. So parsley is definitely temperamental.
Okay, thank you. I'm actually having a good chuckle about that one there. Yeah, I don't know who's going to try planting the parsley in Woodens and everyone's home. But thank you very much, Michelle. You take care, look after yourself, and thanks for all the information. Thanks for sharing.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Ismail.
Thanks, Star. Bye bye.
Bye.
And that was Michelle Kudzer giving us some wonderful advice and what has to be done in the garden this particular time of the year. And if you are going to go out looking for a specific plant, I know lots of queries around. Comfrey, because we had up the summer who spoke about it a couple of weeks back, and if you're in the Roshni area, there's a place you definitely would get some comfrey. And some of the other herbs that she has, lots of other choices, and we spoiled for that. And do take the opportunity going to visit, not that particular, but any garden center. I'm sure you pick up lots of these plants. And if you haven't been bitten by the gardening bug yet and you're wanting to, this is the right time. Sure, Mohammed won't say, he's not in agreement because he doesn't think that you should be bitten. But surprising, Mohammed goes to every garden club meeting. By now he should be an expert and he should be talking to us. Well, that's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. Jazakumullah khair for